Hey, hey, if you're hearing that music, you know it's an edition of Spiritual Perspectives. Spiritual Perspectives, looking at real life from, well, a spiritual perspective. Originating from our flagship station, KEST 1450 AM in San Francisco, syndicated and simulcast around the world on www.ifidknownthen.com. And this morning's program is sponsored by the First Church of Christian Science in Mill Valley, so we'll come back to that. But this morning, I have a special privilege. I've had the opportunity to chat with him before, and I know we'll just pick up and run with it from there. This morning, I'm talking with an individual that actually graduated from Stanford with a BA in economics, joined his family business, which was a large farming venture in Washington State with various fruit orchards, and then after working successfully into the management of that business with his father, bringing that Stanford BA with him, he actually found that his heart was leading him elsewhere, and he transitioned into a full-time career of helping and healing others through a spiritual healing practice. It's sort of familiar to me, walking out in the world with an engineering degree and ending up doing the practice that I'm following now. Our guest this morning, Evan Mellenbacher, had a real turning point in a decision to change careers. He made a visit to an elderly woman who was suffering arthritis. He sat and prayed with her. And she actually soon reported not only a lessening of pain and stiffness, but she was so impressed with her ability to walk freely again that, well, she told on him. She told her friends, and people started calling Evan regularly to pray with them and pray for them. And from that, a full-time public practice of spiritual healing was born. Everybody, I'd like to introduce you to Evan Mellenbacher. Evan, this is everybody.
Scott, this is Evan. Glad to be here. What a joy just to be a part of your program. And you started it off on the right note. That's really where my heart led, was that, boy, there's a lot of ways to help people out there, and this is the way that I was led. And one of the messages I just love to share with all is that just you're never alone.
Cool. Thank you.
It seems like it's a prevalent feeling these days. People get overwhelmed by problems that they're facing, whether it might be a family problem where the marriage is falling apart, or they don't know how to get along with their kids, or maybe it's a financial crisis, you know, we're in debt over our head, we don't know what to do, or it could be a health problem they're facing. And, you know, I just like to start out, and I know you're good at this too, is, hey, you're not alone. There is a higher power at work in this universe that you can turn to for help in those times of needs, and, you know, and lean on it for help. And to help people under, you know, I call it God. I suppose people have different names that they use for this bigger power, but this God to me is this all-knowing, all-wise mind that does have a solution to any problem we ever face. It's an infinite love that can bring comfort and hope in times of despair and sorrow. It's an ever-present spirit that can give us energy, strength, even health in times of weakness, even sickness. And I see prayer as our means of accessing that power, of allowing it to bring our thought into line with the divine, take it to better a place, and leave that trouble behind. You know, so we're not alone. There is something we can do in these times of trouble and find a way out.
You know, you started right out there, Evan, with a comment that really rings home to me, which is, I frequently like to remind people that healing is really not intended to be reserved for disease, but that it runs a whole lot deeper. Now, I know on your website, spiritview.net, there's a line in there that I like a lot that said that with Spirit View, you're looking at life in the universe from a spiritual point of view. Of course, I can get behind that. And it challenges matter-based reasoning that would hold people in mental and physical bondage and seeks to elevate thought to the heights of spirit where health and happiness are readily found. Let's start with that first couple of words there, matter-based reasoning. What on earth are you referencing there? Or that was a bad pun, my bad.
No.
What beyond earth are you referencing there?
Yeah. Well, when I use that phrase, matter-based reasoning, I, You know, obviously, we look around, we live in a house, we drive a car, we eat cauliflower, and, you know, so on. But there's just a whole lot more. So I like to move thought to the more part, that there's something more going on here than just what you see with your physical eyes and sense with your physical senses. There's a whole world of divine mind. And when you start reasoning out from mind rather than just matter all the time, you start to see new views that you didn't realize existed before, including new views of yourself, that you're not just a physical body. You know, you're not just a brain, blood, heart, and so on. You have a spiritual individuality made in the likeness of the divine that truly is whole and perfect in the mind of the divine. And as you understand yourself more from that spiritual point of view, you will start to realize more of the blessings of that spiritual individuality in your everyday human experience.
So you're saying blessings of that spiritual mind, that spiritual individuality. You're talking about, in again, just glancing your website, where you're steering readers into the realm of spirit, where limited thinking falls away, fears melt, sickness abates, and curative presence of infinite love is felt and known. Now, I know we've chatted before, but I do want to go into that thought of, because, okay, there's some people out there with some scars around the word church.
Yeah.
There's some people with some scars around the word God when they picture some old dude with a long beard and a big chair and a bad attitude. Sorry, just my view. Mm-hmm. But you're talking about an infinite love. So it's not just something that was miraculously available 2,000 years ago, but instead we're talking about something that's still very present and very real and very accessible. And I'll just sort of like toss that as a question.
Oh, absolutely. It's the divine principle of the universe, you know, from the beginning. From my point of view, and yes, you're right, these words need clarification because it brings so many different images to people's minds. You're not sure what they're thinking when you say, for example, God.
Mm-hmm.
For me, God, you know, Jesus Christ, you know, from my point of view as a Christian, a practicing Christian Scientist, Jesus came to teach us about God, but Jesus wasn't God, and he was a messenger. And we have a lot to learn about God from what he has taught us and shown.
And,
but God was around, you know, before that, and you know, God is still here. And you know, for me, God is just this, he's the underlying principle of our life. He is love itself. I think that's important, love itself. For people who will say, well, what is God? I don't know God, you know, there's no God in my life. And I'll say, well, have you ever felt someone's love? You know, has anybody ever done something kind for you and you felt loved? Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, well, that was God.
So the Beatles had it right.
God. Yeah, it's really quite simple. God is not this mysterious, vague, theoretical, oh, my gosh, what are you talking about? It's a really, God is a part of your everyday life. I'll even tell people who are struggling with what is God, I'll say, well, you wouldn't even be able to talk to me on the telephone if it wasn't for God. You know, my sense of God is God gives you your consciousness, your ability to think and reason, your ability to love, to feel love, to express love, you know, all these good things. God is good. That's another definition of God. God is good. All good is God, you know, to my sense of things. Truth. You know, truth with a capital T. God is the ultimate truth of all things. And this stuff of the world, going back to the matter, it's all temporal. You know, material things are temporal. Even mortal life is temporal. And if that's all there was to life, well, what's the point? You know, but there is a point. There is more to life than just what you can reason out from the physical senses. And that's what, you know, I'm always searching for is what is the more? What is the spiritual behind what, you know, the challenges that you're facing or whatever? And then you also mentioned, well, what is real healing? Healing is bringing our thinking into line with the divine. It's always an inside job. The immediate problem might be very physical. It could be a disease, or it could be a marriage about to fall apart, or, you know, something very in your face. But the healing need is always something deeper, you know, down in thought. There's some need to get to know God better that will help turn that situation around and get us to a better place.
So let's just walk through it a little bit, because I know that your full-time practice, and for quite some time your full-time practice, has been a practice of spiritual healing, and you're referencing a number of things. So, Evan, in addition to this woman who changed your world by up and healing when you prayed with her and then telling on you, in addition to her, what have you seen people been able to do to, let's jump on one of the examples you just listed. You mentioned if it's a marriage that's just going sideways, what have you been able to see has shifted or changed that for people that allowed them to suddenly be viewing their world from a different place?
All right, we'll start with relationships. That's a precious one to most people. Another concept of God, that I believe in is that there's one God, one mind, and we all have this one mind in common. It's our root source. You know, of me, my neighbor, my wife, my children. Now, we're all unique. Each and every one of us are individual because God is infinite individuality. All right? So we all are unique and special in our own wonderful way, but we're complementary. We're designed to all be together in one grand whole. So, marriage, two. Two in one. And, well, you have two aspects. You have two individuals, but working on one idea, you know, the unity that marriage should signify. So when a spouse calls up and they're fighting with their other, I'll often take them to the oneness of mind. That, okay, you know, from a human perspective, you have different points of view here. But from a spiritual perspective, you have everything in common. And we want to get back down to remembering what you have in common here. Rather than focusing on what's dividing you outwardly, we need to get to what's uniting you inwardly, spiritually. I use the symbol of a triangle to illustrate how this works. The triangle has three points. The top point is, you could label God, you know, or your source. And the bottom two points, husband and wife, man and woman or whatever. And you have three links. You have a link down to the husband, a link down to the wife, and a link between the husband and the wife. And what I explain is everything good that's going to prosper that bottom link between the husband and wife is coming from the top point above. And you first want to get your link between you and God flowing really well here, because what you get from God is what you're going to bring to your marriage with your partner on the bottom link. And so often in times of when we're fighting with another person, we look at them and we think that all of our solution is going to come from them, as if, you know, if they would just change their mind or change their way or give in or get my point of view, everything would be better. It doesn't work always. they don't always do what we think they ought to do. And so, but that's okay. You know, I say, well, let's get back to God. Let's get back to the truth here that you two are of one mind. And you do have something in common here to build on. And instead of looking at them and blaming them, accusing them, condemning them, start sending love their way and start seeing them from God's point of view, that they are a good person, there is good in there, they do have the capacity to understand, to be patient, to be generous, forgiving, you know, whatever the need is, that is built into their being as a child of God. And this is your opportunity to bear witness to that. And so we'll just keep working along those lines, until some lights start to turn on in their thought. And usually there's always something that they go, oh, yeah, you know, I could do a better job of that. Or I could certainly look at them from a more positive point of view. And it helps immensely.
So you've got an article that I'd really enjoyed reading where the key title of the key topic in the article was when someone else is really mad at you, and quite frankly, it's their own mad, and yet you end up starting feeling like your guilt or your contribution that gave them their mad at you. And you've done a really nice job of exploring that, Evan. So talk a little bit about how do we figure out whether we should be offering amends or contrition, or whether we should just be allowing them their own perspectives.
Yeah, I think you're touching on feeling guilty for the awful things that come at us sometimes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Boy, this really happens to people who are maybe passive, or, I mean, generally they're very often kind-hearted, gentle-hearted people, and then someone erupts at them and gets really mad and angry, and then they start to think, oh, you know, what did I do to cause that?
Right, right.
And they blame themselves.
Whether we blame ourselves on a physical level of I made them mad, regardless of whether their mad is reasonable, or whether we blame ourselves on a spiritual level of I must have drawn this to me, maybe God's mad at me.
Yes. Both of them are awful. Yeah. First of all, it does help to be clear that Mary Baker Eddy, she's the one who discovered Christian Science. She wrote in her textbook, Science and Health, it is folly to suffer for other people's sins.
Ooh.
And I love that. Because,
ooh, say that
I mean,
again.
I certainly make my share of mistakes.
Say that again.
And,
say
know,
that
bring
again.
My own suffering upon myself. But there are times when it's not my mistake, when somebody just goes over the edge and it's not because of anything I did. I mean, maybe something I did triggered it, but in an innocent kind of way. You know, it wasn't, they just got upset because they didn't get their way, perhaps. And so, you know, what we need to do is, first of all, see what the real issue is and not let somebody else's burden become our burden. But, you know, I don't like to just walk away from it. There is something we can do. We can throw a healing love upon that fire and start to drown it out. And it helps me to impersonalize the anger or the evil that we're seeing. And by impersonalize, I mean separate the evil from the person. Mm. And know that as a child of God, that person was created to be loving, thoughtful, kind, you know, and understanding. And this anger or selfishness or pride or ego that is erupting out of their being, you know, at the moment, is not their individuality as a child of God. Just separate it out from them, you know, in your mind, and realize the enemy is not the person. It's the evil they're manifesting. And that enemy, that evil, is what needs to be destroyed and handled, and it can be handled with truth and love. And as we maintain a composure, you know, of spiritual calm and authority, it gives us authority and dominion to respond in some kind of healing way that will start to, you know, hopefully calm that situation down, reverse it, or at the very least protect you from being abused by it.
Cool.
I'll give you a simple example. I was just sitting in my office one day, it was early in the morning, and this car drives up, and this really big man, big in all ways, comes storming into my office. I was in a strip mall. He just could walk in the front door, and I didn't know him from anybody, but he was raging mad. He wasn't waving a gun or anything, but he was so big and so physical, you know, he was extremely intimidating. But he came raging into my office, and he started beating on my desk and in my face, and it had nothing to do with me. I didn't know where this came from. I didn't know what was, you know, but it felt very threatening. Thank goodness there was a desk between me and him. And but he was just over the edge, you know, verbally and physically. He didn't hit me, but it sure felt like he might. And it took me a while. What had happened was he had just had this horrible thing with his girlfriend, and he was looking for somebody to take it out on. And I was the first one he could find there.
Oh, how nice of you to be available.
And so, but I stepped back, you know, I took a step back from my desk so he couldn't reach me, and immediately in my own mind I said, this is not the child of God. What I'm seeing here, this is not what God created this man to be. Whatever it is that's tipped him off, it can be healed. You know, it can be healed. It can be separated from his thinking, and he can find his peace about this. And so while, he was not in a listening mode, you know, he was just going on and on. And so I just quietly prayed in my mind to see the truth about him, and that he was, God gave him a mind of to have a mind of peace and calm, that he could reason clearly. He could be patient here with whatever the trouble was. There was a solution. He could feel it. He could find it. God was speaking to him. God was there in his mind talking to him right now, helping him find his peace. And, you know, I just kept pouring on the love and helping him feel that love. And it really did work. You know, he started to calm down, and eventually he sat down, and he stopped ranting and raving, and pretty soon we had a more of a civil conversation. And by the time he left the office, you know, 45 minutes later, he was in a total peace of mind, and he actually became a friend. He would come back, you know, every couple of weeks and say hi. But anyway, that's, you know, it really worked, just my quiet pouring on love prayerfully in his direction helped him find his peace. And you'll find the same rule works in marriages. Sometimes, you know, there isn't anything we can say that's going to help, and we just need to be quiet maybe and just address the situation prayerfully, get our ego out of the way. That's really important. Get our ego out of the way, because if we react in kind, we're just going to increase the conflict. We're not going to bring healing. We need to respond with love and understanding and patience, you know, and pour it on. And same with teenagers. I've raised a couple myself now. I don't know about you, but you know, there's times when they don't want to listen. They have their mind made up, and they don't want to hear it. You know, so what do you do then? You know, especially when it seems like they're just maybe headed in a wrong direction here.
Right.
Prayer works. You know, I've learned that things, oftentimes, verbalizing a truth. What I've learned is the truth that you want to verbalize actually can get into their thinking more effectively if you just quietly anoint them with that truth. You know, when the words just aren't getting through, don't give up. Don't think it's hopeless. Just go into your quiet prayer corner, wrap the arms of love around that child, and just know that you know, I call it the Christ. To me, the Christ is the presence of God at work in our lives. That the Christ is right there in their thought, speaking to them in a way that they understand, that they will get, and they will respond to. And I've just seen it, you know, work wonders time and time again. It will work with any relationship.
Mm-hmm. I love chatting with you because it's so fascinating to see how our thoughts run in similar directions and to hear them in different words and from a different perspective. I do a lot with looking at things as being an energy flow, and God is an energy flow. But I'm fascinated with words, and I just love the fact that when we're in live or live, L-I-V-E, we could think of ourselves with that energy flowing in a forward direction. But if we get it flowing backwards, like you said, if we can't get it separated out of our thinking, then we spell L-I-V-E backwards, and it ends up being E-V-I-L.
Very good.
So when we get the thought backwards, then all of a sudden it works out backwards. So you've mentioned a word a number of times, Evan, and I just love this word. It's the word prayer. And I'd like to know, what does that word mean for you? Not a big industrial, broad-based description, but for you itself. How do you know you're doing it? What does it do? How do you recognize it? How do you go about it? What's it bring about for you? What's that word mean for you, prayer?
Oh, yes. Prayer for me is, the purpose of prayer for me is for me to listen for God's direction. And my sense of prayer is God already knows. God already knows the solution. He knows the right idea, and he has a good idea of, you know, what direction we need to head. So the big question is, am I listening? Am I in a ready state of mind to receive? And oftentimes the answer is no. I'm all worked up about my problem, you know, or I'm overwhelmed with fear, or I'm just asleep, you know, I'm daydreaming, I'm not quite there. And so for me, the activity of prayer is getting my thought tuned up, getting it into a ready state so I can hear what it is I need to hear to see through the problem that I'm facing at the moment. Or, of course, the motivation of prayer for me is not always to see through a problem. Often the motivation is just to grow, to grow in my understanding of the infinite, to grow in my understanding of who I am spiritually, to become more informed, spiritually. But again, that's a listening mode too. The ideas are there. They're all there in the mind of God. They're all there in consciousness. And the purpose of prayer is to listen. There are many different ways to pray. I'd never like to say there's only one particular way you can pray, because there's many different ways to pray. Mm-hmm. But, some of the more common forms might include, for example, the pleading prayer. Lord, please, please, please. tell my boss to give me a raise, or fill in the blank. And
I promise,
the harder we plead, the more likely our request may be granted. And I don't know if that's really the way it works, Or another kind of prayer is the bargain prayer. Make a deal with the Lord. Okay, God, this is the deal. You get me what I want over here, and I'll do anything you want me to over here.
Uh-huh.
But you go first. how that one ends up.
Uh-huh.
Then there's the grocery list prayer. We've all done these prayers. The grocery list prayer, God, I need some more money. I need to lose weight. I need a partner. I need a job. And like handing our wants over to Santa Claus and expecting everything to show up under the tree on Christmas Day. As if we knew better what we needed than God did.
Right.
Another point to think about. And then there's what I call the smiley face prayer. Put on the big smile and, everything's wonderful. Everything's perfect. Everything couldn't be better. And, this aching back is killing me kind of thing. But everything's perfect. Everything's wonderful. And I suppose we might call that positive thinking. Although positive thinking has its merits. It definitely is a whole lot better than negative thinking. But it only seems to get us just so far, and there's just something more that's needed. And so that more that I've seen is understanding. And again, this is what I seek for when I go to God in prayer, is understanding better what God is, what God's doing in my life, and my relationship to God. In fact, I often refer to one of my favorite quotes from Jesus Christ is, "Know the truth, and the truth will set you free." Well, that Jesus had a sense that prayer is a whole lot more than just saying the right words, or some kind of ritualistic formula. That word "know" means gain a knowledge of or understand the truth. And that truth that you understand is what will set you free from whatever's trying to hold you back. So that's my prayer is, what do I need to understand better? With relationships, what do I need to understand better about love, or maybe patience, or forgiveness, or maybe wisdom, when it comes to forming happy, healthy relationships, finances, struggling with debt or shortage or whatever, what do I need to understand better about infinite supply here that will help me turn this situation around? Or with health, disease, a dire diagnosis from the doctor, maybe. What do I need to understand better about the true nature of health as having a spiritual source and built into my being as a child of God that will help bring a resolution to this crisis? And so that's what I listen for, and I keep listening and listening until I find the peace. I call it the peace, and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, is where everything settles down. The fears go away, the tension dissolves, the stress has vanished, and then there's when that right idea just settles into consciousness from above, and it's like, and you do. There's this deep, deep peace that takes over your thinking, and it's a sure sign that you have made progress, that you're either there or a whole lot closer to where you need to be. That's going to bring the healing, into your life.
Perfect. I'm going to come back and actually press you with some more questions about that. I want to break away for just a second to remind folks that you're listening to Spiritual Perspectives, taking a look at real life from a spiritual perspective. We've been sponsored this morning by the First Church of Christ Scientists in Mill Valley. If you find these sorts of ideas interesting, they're a research and a resource. That's the word I want. They're a resource. So Evan and I will talk more about that as well. They have gatherings on Sunday mornings and on Wednesday evenings. They invite you to join them there, or you can check out more at spirituality.com. Meanwhile, I'll just remind you that this is Spiritual Perspectives, looking at real life from, well, a spiritual perspective. I'm Scout Bartlett. I'm your host. We're originating from our flagship station, KEST 1450 AM, broadcasting in San Francisco, syndicated and simulcast around the world on www.ifidknownthen.com. www.ifidknownthen.com, or the shortcut, if you need to remember it, is just notscott.com. Our guest this morning is Evan Mellenbacher, and we're talking a lot about prayer and finding that place to separate out the part of our thoughts that's keeping us separate, get our ego out of the way, and coming back into alignment so that we can recognize healing. So, Evan, we were just talking about it. You were saying that you go in and you listen until you can find that place of peace, and that this is a portion of your prayer. How do you guide that listening? Because I know that my brain doesn't just go silent. I sort of have a place to put it before I can find my way in.
The other question one might ask to answer your question is, what is getting in the way?
Perfect.
Yeah. What's getting in the way of finding that peace? And it's a fear. It's almost always a fear of something. And the need of that prayer is to dissolve that fear. How do you do that? By gaining a better, increased, more expanded, enlarged understanding of God's infinite love that will dissolve that fear. Fear is a sense of danger. That's what it is. There's something's going to get me. a threat of loss, or something's going to be taken from me, or an unknown. You know, it's a sense of danger. Well, the more one understands God is infinite love, that you're swimming in a universe of love, and that love and care is all around at all times, through in and throughout your being, around, above, you know, just everywhere, that fear is going to start to dissolve and disappear and go away. Because love is more powerful than fear, just like light is more powerful than darkness. Fear is darkness of the mortal mind, of the human mind. And love is the light that dissolves that darkness, makes it go away, and replaces it with that peace that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. So we mentioned that we were sponsored by a church. And I know there's some people that have some history with that word, and in some cases some scars. I certainly know that at times when in my various practices and studying various religions, I have visited churches and suddenly been inundated and hammered with either you have to agree with us or you have to join or we want you to come back. And all I really wanted to do was come in and see what their thought process was. So if people find the kinds of thoughts that you and I are talking about to be interesting, but they haven't been able to find resources, or the resources have been just very expensive offerings, what could you tell them about your average, if there were such a thing, Church of Christian Science?
Yeah, Church of, actually, if you were to look it up in the Yellow Pages, or, well, we don't do Yellow Pages anymore, do we? If you were to look up on the web, they would likely be identified in your local community as a Church of Christ Scientist. It might be First Church of Christ Scientist, Second, you know, just depending on when they appeared in that community. But there's hundreds of them all around North America, around the world. It is a worldwide international movement. And but the Mary Baker Eddy, she's the one who established the Church of Christ Scientist back in the 1800s. She was a member of the mainline church, well, congregational church, actually. That's the one she was raised in. So she was very familiar with the mainline scenario. And when she set up her church, it really was set up for the individual to go to God and find their answers. It was set up in such a way that you don't have a personal preacher saying this is who you should vote for, or this is where you should stand on the political hot political issue of the moment. That's not a part of the Church of Christ Zionist climate. It's all about spirituality, you know, and it has a huge respect for the individual's own journey. Church is a collective experience where we're growing together, learning from other people's experience and benefiting from what they're learning, and they're benefiting from what we're learning. But really, Christian Science is very much worked out between you and God. And so it'll be interesting. You can have members in the same church who, you know, you may have a whole bunch of this political party and that other political party, and they stand here on this issue and that on that issue. But that stuff doesn't, at least it shouldn't, it shouldn't matter compared to the greater issue of what is God? You know, who are you as God's child? And understanding that relationship better so you can experience more healing in your life. So if you attend a service at a Church of Christ Zionist, the pastor is actually the Bible, and Science and Health is the Key to the Scriptures, two books, and there's two readers. One reader reads from the Bible, one reader reads from the Science and Health, and there's a sermon that is put together every week that the readers will read for during that church service. It might be on God or love or truth or, you know, some big subject like that with a lesser theme underneath of it, how to be more loving or how to experience more God's love or, you know, live a life of integrity and principle and so on. And you know, that's the way the service is put together. And it has music and prayer and, you know, the other kind of attributes that most services do. But there won't be anybody up there saying this is the way you should vote. That's between you and God.
Yeah.
And what I found is people who have had what are called sour church experiences, and they just don't want to, you know, go back. It has something to do, from my point of view, of something that really shouldn't have anything to do with church anyway, you know, or God. Oftentimes, it's a misunderstanding of what God is. Maybe they were taught that God is a God of wrath. That has been a common teaching, and that just doesn't resonate with them. They've learned more about the love nature of God, that God is love. And so when they hear someone preach that those people were wiped out by a tsunami because they were evil, you know, that's just not going to resonate. And I agree. You know, to me, that's a misunderstanding of God. In ignorance of what God is love. And God's love is here to help us overcome evil situations like that and save people from suffering. So it's a big subject, Scout, and there's a lot of different reasons people have the opinions they've formed about church. But usually, from my point of view, it comes down to something has been taught or heard that really is not the truth about God, and they're rebelling against it, you know, and trying to find their peace somewhere else.
So I know when I've seen Christian Science reading rooms, before I got more introduced to the topic, I didn't really know if I was invited or if it was okay for me to just go in and hang out to meditate or read or see what the heck was in there. And I'm gathering that it really is an open invitation and a resource, and that the person working there doesn't even require that you chat with them unless you want to.
That's right. There, the East Church will have what's called a Christian Science Reading Room, which is really a bookstore, but it also serves as a study place, a quiet place of study for those who just need a quiet place to go, like a library. It has a library, it's a store, it's both of those things. It also is staffed. So you can go on to christianscience.com on the web, and there's a worldwide directory of branch churches and reading rooms. And there just might be one right in your immediate local community. There in the Bay Area, they're all over the place, so there probably is. And, you know, stop into one of those reading rooms, and there'll be somebody there. They'll be happy to answer your questions. There won't be any proselytizing. Christian Scientists just aren't into that. They're really pretty low-key people. In fact, maybe too low-key at times, and because we have such a respect for each individual's, you know, own journey in figuring things out. But the reading room is filled with resources. It has Bibles and Bible reference books, but it also has Mary Baker Eddy's textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, which explains what Mrs. Eddy discovered back in the 1800s in her quest to understand better how to heal through prayer. And that just was a motivating, primary motivating factor for her, because she was raised on the Bible by very religious parents and taught that, yep, you can go to God and pray and be healed, but that just always wasn't happening. She had some serious health issues of her own that she tried everything, you know, medically and, you know, all different kinds of different alternative methods of healing, and just could never find freedom until she finally made this discovery into the true nature of man as being wholly spiritual. That just turned everything around for her, and she was able to heal herself, but she also healed hundreds, thousands of other people of some of the worst diseases that mankind faced at that time, solely through her prayers. And so she really did make a major discovery into how to heal like Jesus expected his followers to heal, and she wrote it down in the form of her book, Science and Health, with Key to the Scriptures. And so if you're an individual looking, you know, if you're open-minded to new views and new ways of thinking, I'd encourage you to get one of those books, Science and Health, and sit down with it and read it through and see what you might discover here, because, you know, I don't think I need to learn everything the hard way. It is fun to discover on your own, but there are a lot of thinkers who have gone before us who have made some major discoveries and insights that we all can benefit from, and she is definitely one of them.
Oh, I can so resonate with that, because I'm very aware that every time I bump into somebody that's practicing or teaching in the same directions that I function, I want to study with them, because I'd really rather learn what they learned than have to hammer it through in my own direction.
Yeah.
Now, there's one place I want to jump back to, speaking of things that could be painful. When my life's path begin to be drawn out of the engineering degree that I had earned from Washington U. St. Louis, when my life's path began to be drawn into my life's work, which has turned out to be an entire life's work of spiritual practice, there was a period my dad was as supportive as he could be, but there was a period where he was, every time we'd talk, he'd sort of try to gently find out, did you find a job yet? And then after a while, when it didn't look like I was doing that, but seemed like I was supporting myself okay, it kind of shifted over to, well, how you doing? Are you doing okay? Because Dad was an engineer. His dad was technical. I have an engineering degree. My brother has an engineering degree. So I know you came out of Stanford, of all places, with your BA in economics, which I'm sure was geared toward the fact that there was a family business to join into. You joined the family business, and then your life path took you differently. How was that exchange and that changeover with your family?
It was tough. It was really tough.
Yeah.
When I was a senior at Stanford, getting ready to graduate, needed to find a job, I did not intend to come back to the family business. I mean, I told Dad that before I went to Stanford. I said, I'm not coming back here.
you were one of those teenagers.
But I was going to go out and get a business job somewhere and make millions of dollars.
That was
my goal. But when I started looking at the job options, just none of them resonated. It's like, okay, yeah, I could go, you know, be a banker or, you know, go do this and that, but I'd be bored of it in 6 months. I could see that from where I was in my thinking. And so after much torture, I finally decided, oh, just be grateful. Just go back and work in the family business. Dad, you know, he would love it, and because, you know, to take over the business, and you would be welcome there, and he would just move you right up the ladder, you know, as fast as you were able to demonstrate, you know. So just be grateful and just go back home. So I did. And, of course, Dad was thrilled to have me come back, and we really did get along. I mean, we worked together really well as business partners and complemented each other in many ways. But after 2 or 3 years, my heart just was not in it, Scout. I just, you know, growing more apples and growing more corn and increasing our yields and planting more trees. I mean, there is a good aspect to that, and the world needs that kind of thing, but I just didn't see me as being the one who needed to be doing that. There had to be something more. And, you know, eventually I found the more to be helping others spiritually. That just had rich meaning for me. And I had to give up my, desire to, you know, become a multimillionaire. That was also a big struggle. Just, you know, money's not that important, Evan. You know, you need money to put food on the table and all, but it really doesn't take that much. And, you know, just learn to be, you know, that was a struggle for me to move from, I got to make a lot of money to just, it's more important to live a spiritually rich life. And I did do that. And when I told Dad that I wanted to leave the farm, well, actually, Scott, I have to, 3 years in after Stanford, I did one day, I just floated it out, you know, I don't think this is my right place. And he got really, really mad. I mean, really, really mad. And I retracted. I said, oh, just forget it. You know, I'm going to stay here and don't worry about it. You know, I'm happy being a farmer. I lied. I just lied to save the peace. And so I had to, you know, it took me 2 or 3 more years to work out of that. But finally, you know, I got my confidence and gumption. But it was more than that. It was a deep spiritual conviction that it was not my right place. And so I finally said it again, you know, 2 or 3 years later. I said, Dad, this isn't for me. I've got to do something different. And that time he didn't get mad. He accepted it. Well, he did not accept it, really. He agreed to it, but he didn't get it. He didn't get it. You know, he didn't understand how could anybody leave this kind of an opportunity to do, you know. Because from a business point of view, you could hardly have it better. But so I just, you know, worked it out gracefully over 8 or 10 months and left him in a good place and took off. And I was newly married at that point. But it was the right decision. You know, I mean, I had my doubts over a couple of years because I didn't make any money. But we had a roof over our head. We could put gas in the car and some, you know, food on the table. That's all we needed. But over the next few years, I found my footing, you know, found my place. My ministry began to grow, and I demonstrated my usefulness, and people's lives were being changed. And, you know, eventually we were in a very good place in all ways as my ministry matured. Looking back, it definitely was the right thing to do, and I'm so happy that I had enough courage, you know, to follow through with where God really was leading me.
And you've actually, like, stuck with it now for a while.
Yeah, so now I've been in 27 years.
That's a while.
Been doing this full time, and we've raised a couple kids through it. They're both, one's out of college and one's halfway through, and have a wonderful, happy family, and just have just seen so many blessings come out of it. But it really, you know, do what you love. There's a lot, boy, that's true, you know, your days are filled up with love. I don't think it can get any better. But what I've also learned, and I've learned from my study of Christian Science, is that when you're really following God's direction, and He knows your best place, He's going to take care of you. You know, He's going to shelter you and feed you and clothe you along the way. It's just the way the universe works. It works together for good. All things are working together for good. And if that's where you belong, then things are going to work together for that to be possible for you. And that was where I belonged, and that's where I am.
All right, so now that I have you on the hot seat, I know that lots of people have found in their lives along the way that if they tried to break out and move into their spiritual practices, maybe not even as their mode of income, but just to follow their spiritual practices in addition, there's a lot of programming out there that seems to put together just like the word starving artist, it seems like there's a starving spiritual practitioner mentality that lots of people have to work through. Evan, what can you remember that shifted or changed or healed in you that let you step out of the, well, I'm going to leave Dad's farm and my wife and I are just, well, I'm not going to make any money, but what can you remember that had to heal or shift or change in you that let you go from, I'm not going to make any money, to, you know, a place where you were actually making a living and raising a family?
And I know the answer to that exactly, Scout.
Oh, thank you.
It was the moment that I realized I did not have to earn a living. I'll just walk you
through
that.
You're going to want to repeat that one.
I did not have to earn a living. It was a gift from God. Well, this came to me about 2 or 3 years after I made after I left the farm, because I did struggle with, oh my gosh, I'm never, you know, I can't even have kids. I can't even afford to raise kids. But I had this old model in my mind that I had to earn a living. Yet in my ministry, people were calling me for help, and I was taking them to God to find their supply, whether it was a health supply, a love supply, a joy supply, a hope supply, you know, all these different things, these positive things that they were needing to feel in their life. I was saying to them, okay, we're going to go to God and we're going to find it. You know, God is your source. Then I said, I suddenly had like a duh moment. Well, Evan, that rule applies to you too in all ways. If this is where you belong in the ministry, God is giving you everything you need to do this job well. You don't have to earn it. It's a gift. It's through the grace of God that you're able to do this. It's here and now. It's already a part of you.
How did you separate your ego out of, I'm such a brilliant spiritual practitioner, therefore God's going to give me this gift, to get into a place of not have to earn a living and yet still be in a living?
By understanding my unity with God better, that
yes.
God's not over there and I'm sitting over here, and all the good is over there with God somewhere. And man, how am I ever going to bridge this gap between my source and me? that I am the living manifestation of God's good.
Oh, say that again, Evan.
I am the living manifestation of God's good.
And God
so
is,
you.
By definition,
yep,
good.
See, God and man are one. Like water and wet, like a circle is round, God and man, and I mean man in a generic sense, men, women, and children, are one. And so the purpose of prayer is to understand our relationship to God. Well, it's as one. So God is the supplier, I'm the supply. It's not two. It's not God over there and me over here. We're together as one. So what God is, I manifest. So God is whole and complete, fully supplied, you know, as the infinite source and presence of all good. I am the presence of that good. So I am whole and complete. My ministry is whole and complete. It does not lack anything. It cannot lack anything. And that just has a way of manifesting itself in appropriate human conditions, which allow, you know, in my case, my ministry to proceed, to still got to pay my bills just like everybody else.
Yeah.
But once I caught that glimpse of truth, I no longer worried about how I was going to earn a living ever again. I really did find my peace about that. I managed my finances well, you know, at least I think I do, but I don't worry about where the next check is going to come from. And it's never been a problem ever since.
I am so glad I asked that question. You're giving me chills here, Evan. I want to just stay with that a little more. He mentioned a line earlier of an enlarged understanding of the truth of God swimming in a universe of love. Now, I tossed that out and we've got like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Give me a stronger sense of how one refines their awareness that they are immersed in that which is God.
It's moving from a matter world to a spirit world. From everything is dirt and bricks and houses and cars to really we live in a universe of mind where things are thoughts. And ideas are substance, and we're one of those ideas of God. And all the riches and blessings and resources of the one divine mind are just all around us all the time. And so instead of seeing a thing, you know, don't get focused on things. Instead of seeing a material tree, for example, what's the beautiful idea behind it? Instead of just seeing a flower that you can stomp on and crush to the ground, what's the beautiful idea behind it? Instead of just seeing another person walking down the street, where look for the idea in that person, you know, their true individuality. If someone expresses joy and love and wisdom in their own unique way, look for the idea behind the thing. And the more you realize you live in a universe of mind, your thoughts just going to start tuning in more and more to the presence of God's love and care and goodness all around, because you're going to be discerning these ideas and seeing things in their true nature, their true form. You're going to resonate with them. You're going to feel, you know, at one with them, and you begin to see that God is all around. God is all around me. God is spirit. God's not material things. God's a spiritual presence. But your consciousness gets less earthly and more heavenly, and you feel more celestial. And literally, the physical body will quiet down. It'll become silent, and you'll be more in the realm of spirit. You know, with your thinking throughout the day, you'll just feel the presence of God more. You'll identify with it more. You'll reflect it with more clarity and transparency for others around you. You'll be more in touch. You'll be more in tune. And it's the state of consciousness.
Fabulous. Evan, I want to thank you from the depths of my heart for letting me sort of go off book here a bit and get right in your face and find out some more personal details, because you brought a phenomenal piece of teaching right there. I could feel the chills up and down my back. It's such a delight to get to talk with you. Thank you so much.
You are so welcome, Scott. It's always a delight to interview with you.
Thanks. I appreciate it. So I want to remind everybody that we will have this archived on our website. It'll also get archived on the website for the First Church of Christ Scientist, Mill Valley, or you can find it in ours at www.ifidknownthen.com. Under radio and archives, the shortcut into the website, if you can't remember that, is just notscott.com. Go right on in. And Evan, this has been Evan Mellenbacher. You can find his website at spiritview.net, spiritview.net. And this is your host, Scout Bartlett, thanking you for joining with us. This is another edition of Spiritual Perspectives, taking a look at real life from, well, a spiritual perspective. I just want to ask you two favors as we go away. The first favor is that treat yourself as a loved one. Because just as Evan's been pointing out, you're immersed in that which is love. Treat yourself as a loved one, because you truly are. And no matter where on earth you are, it's a perfect day to have a great day on purpose.